altitude's undefeated.
Crap, maybe we'll punch it up, whatever it was in.
Not a huge time on it,
I don't know where I was going. I looked like I was running and started to talk to someone. I don't know what I was doing.
I tell you what, Matt, we don't get much by you, that's for sure. From you and analysis in your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. It is October 25th, 2023. My name is Matt Pollard. This terrible, horrible, no good, rotten, very bad Rapids season is finally, mercifully over. Joining me now to talk about it and other things going forward, my best buddy in the whole wide world, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Oh, that's so sweet, Matt. It's so good to talk to you. Hey, I did a math this today. I took did most of the day off today, and I went hiking. I think I climbed 300 vertical feet, Matt.
All right.
Maybe 600. There's not a lot of vertical feet here in Pittsburgh, so, but it was good. I went to Raccoon Creek State Park, and there were natural springs, and there was ridge climbing, and there was lots of foliage. A lot of foliage, man. Woo! I was doing some hardcore leaf peeping, Matt. You ever done some leaf peeping?
I love me some leaf peeping, Mark. granted, most of it's past, obviously. I will admit, Rabbi, as the son of a Michigander. Obviously, I'm in a group chat with all my family and everything. My mom and my dad were up to close the summer cabin that we have in Otsego County in the northern portion of the lower peninsula of Michigan. So roughly like right where that last digit or where that last bend that you have in like the middle finger or the ring finger, roughly where Otsego County is. And they were going apple picking. They were doing fall stuff. My mom was baking many good things that obviously I did not get to eat whatsoever. Colorado and the Aspens do fantastic oranges and yellows. The reds, and particularly a very good transition from the greens to the reds, I will admit the Midwest and the Northeast absolutely has us beat. I was, you'll remember, Rabbi, I was at a wedding for the final home game of two seasons ago now. So the 1-0 win over FC Dallas, Drew Moore's final game for the Rapids. And I was there a little bit early in Maine for leaf peeping, and it was fantastic. So it's still fall here in Colorado, Mark, but in the high country, it is fall on the ground. And in Denver, we've had some really good color changes. I went for a drive on a couple of errands and passed by some fantastic leaf peeping that we had here. But I don't know if you checked the weather forecast, Rabbi, but Chris Bianchi has the first snowfall in Denver proper likely this coming weekend. So I think that'll kill off any of the colors that we have. Winter is coming, and I am here for lay powder. But
nice. We've got nice weather here. We're having whatever weather you guys had 2 days ago, so it's extra warm here.
Mark, anything you want to say about Decision Day? Not rapid specific, but anything you want to say about Decision Day, or would you like to commiserate your Pittsburgh River Hounds who fumbled the bag?
Yeah, that was pretty disastrous. I had to go to a, it seems like every year at this time, like I do like a, my wife gets me into, well, this was a friend of all of ours, but kind of like a couple's date kind of thing. So we went over to some folks' house for dinner. So I actually didn't get to go to the Riverhounds game, but I literally, in what are resonant and recurring famous words that the editor of Pittsburgh Soccer Now has said to me before, he literally texted me and was like, "Oh, don't worry. You'll catch the next round. I'm pretty sure the Riverhounds are going to make a deep run this year." And I was like, don't say that. I've said that before. I think 4 years ago when I got here, I said to myself, like, oh, I'll take the night off. I'm not going to go to this round's game. I'm sure I'll get to go to the next round. And then, of course, there is no next round. So it's a bummer. The Hounds, you know, that's the playoffs, though. I mean, I think that the challenge, of course, of any soccer team is that when you build a team, you build them thinking, oh, they're definitely quality enough to make it all the way to the USL final or the USL semis. And the reality is, like, anything can happen in one soccer game. Being the best in the division for the year doesn't mean much. I think the thing that's sad enough, and I think I said this last year and the year before, but for new fans, it's always worthwhile picking up. It's more so even in USL than in MLS, but a defeat in the playoffs is also a goodbye, because all of those players, most of those players are not coming back. They are going off to someplace else. I mean, almost every USL contract is a 1 year or a 2 year deal. First year players are often renewed on a 2 year deal. So it's very rare for any player in USL to play more than 3 years for the same team. There's a few exceptions. Canardo Forbes for the Riverhounds is kind of always here. I believe he's on a 2 year deal. Our other incredibly popular player is a local celebrity who grew up with the team and whose name is Robbie Mertz. After that, everybody else is kind of like, who knows? I mean, in fact, you know, our goalkeeper was fantastic this year. It would be great. The Riverhounds almost never keep a goalkeeper for 2 years. Of course, he's been the backup for the Jamaican national team. So I think he probably has a lot of opportunity to go abroad or get picked up by an MLS team or somebody bigger than him, or at least make money and go somewhere else in USL. So we shall see. I have said way too much about the Riverhounds for our audience, but I also think decision day was kind of exciting just in general. There were a few important games. Charlotte sneaking in at the death. A couple. I think Minnesota getting knocked out at the last possible second. Both of those were worthwhile games. But you know, we'll see how that plays out as these playoffs go on.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting from a decision day standpoint, Mark, that it was, I don't know that we've had a decision day, and maybe this is a function of the new format and having more teams in it, of like more teams having uncertainty in terms of them getting in, because you had two spots up for grabs across four teams in the Eastern Conference, and then I think it was two spots in five or three in five as well, and there were a lot of, you only had two of those games, one in each conference, that was directly involving any of those teams. So some of those were dead rubber team versus a team competing for that. Some of those other games were team competing for seeding versus team competing for their for their playoff lives. And so I'll admit I was kind of scatterbrained from a decision day standpoint, Mark. Obviously, in normal years or in years past, we would care about what it meant from a Rapids perspective. So in 2021, the only games that we cared about was what was going on with Sporting Kansas City and Seattle Sounders, as those three teams were jockeying for those top three spots in the Western Conference. And then it was the 2016 season. I believe there was still an outside shot that the Rapids could have won the Supporters Shield that day, but like they needed Dallas to lose and the Rapids needed to beat Houston, I think. And then there was some goal difference or some other tiebreaker involved in that. So there's only one other, I'm used to usually only caring about one or two other games, but functionally, decision day was a dead rubber from a Rapids perspective. So I was paying generally attention to what was going on in MLS, but specifically around two games that I was interested about because of some of my other media colleagues, who my best friends still at Last Word on Soccer are Harvey Cruz, who is a New York Red Bulls supporter, Mark, and I was obviously watching as they very dramatically ended up sneaking in at the last minute. And we're recording this, listeners, at halftime of Sporting Kansas City versus San Jose, and the Red Bulls have already won their play-in game, their wild card game, whatever you want to call it, the 8-9 game against Charlotte, so happy for Harvey. And the other one, Dan, I think is set up perfectly because my other good friend from Last Word, who had doubts about the team he covers making the playoffs, was Daniel Sperry over at the Kansas City Star, who covers Sporting Kansas City. And Mark, I don't know if you know this, he's originally from the northern part of California, so he gets an absolute treat in getting Sporting Kansas City versus San Jose Earthquakes, his youth club as well. So I'm not just rooting this because of the potential rooting interest that my other friends in the media may be interacting with listeners, but I want them, as long as it doesn't inhibit my opportunities to cover big games or advanced opportunities, you know, get to cover a final, I want them to have those same opportunities as well. And so, you know, now I've had, you know, if Sporting Kansas City is able to hold over that, then you're talking just more home games for my friends who get to cover those opportunities. And I'm here and I cheer for them to be able to cover good and interesting stories in the same ways that I've tried to cover good and interesting stories, regardless of how non-competitive the Rapids were this season. But Mark, if I'm going to be honest with you, I was really torn about whether or not I was going to actually go to the Rapids Decision Day because you had Hailstorm playing up in Windsor, and then I was also contemplating covering it from home and quad boxing between the Switchbacks who were at San Antonio as well. Because you're talking about, Mark, when is the last time that you had, I think, you know, all three Colorado teams playing at the same time in games that mattered? Obviously, the Rapids game didn't matter for seeding, but it mattered from a pride standpoint, given this, as we'll come on to in a minute, folks, I think is the final game for a number of Burgundy boys. And obviously, a game against RSL, even if one or both teams doesn't have anything to play for in terms of standings, will still matter emotionally, even with the Rocky Mountain Cup already decided. And with the USL team still mostly at a 7 p.m. kickoff, that obviously, you know, it's different in terms of the overlap of only having, what, I guess an hour and a half as opposed to the full 2 hours between Switchbacks, Hailstorm, and Rapids all kicking off just after 7 p.m. For those of you who don't want to check your phone because you're driving or something, or apparently I'm in I'm in judgmental Jim's head, Mark. So it was a joke on Twitter. And so, Jim, maybe I'm in your head and thus you're distracted and don't want to check your phone. San Antonio FC did defeat Switchbacks 1-0 and then Hailstorm absolutely romped forward Madison. So Hailstorm will go to North Carolina for this weekend. And then if they win that, they will be in the final. And then on the other side, I think it's Charlotte FC versus the number one seed, which is Union Omaha, the one with the owl mascot, or owl crest. And so if Hailstorm win and then Omaha win, that final will be a week from this coming Sunday, and that will be in Omaha. But then if Hailstorm win and Charlotte wins, so that Hailstorm are playing Charlotte FC or Charlotte Independence, it will be a it'll be a Hailstorm home match, and they'll be hosting the final in just their second year. So that's interesting for me, Mark. Rabbi, anything else we want to say about Decision Day? Full disclosure, listeners, we are MLS Cup playoffs agnostic. Mark, I think the only matchup in that first round proper with the three-leg series that I'm actually interested in watching or have doubts about what's going to happen is probably Atlanta versus Columbus. But Mark, I'm so burnt out from this season. I want to do some other stuff as well. I think I don't want to watch the playoffs and then give MLS the viewership metrics that they're looking for and validation to say that this playoff format was a good decision or not purely for money reasons at the expense of the quality of the competition and the significance of the playoff games. Mark, right now, there is a non-zero possibility, and it may even be 50-50, that I do not watch a playoff game until MLS Cup. Rabbi, what do you think? Or shall we just move on because you don't care about the playoffs now?
I care about the playoffs. I'm going to be watching. I will be covering probably some high school soccer here a little bit. So not, but I'm going to keep our listeners from having to hear about the Whitfield 3A girls matchups that I'm excited to talk about. Although I will point out that out here in Pittsburgh, the teams have ridiculous names like Moon and Mars and Zelianople and strange things like that. I would say that the teams that I'm interested in, most interested in hearing are, I'm rooting for Houston because they've had such a really good season, and also they're playing RSL, so clearly I have a rooting interest there. And I'll also be rooting for Columbus because I got to watch them a ton this season because they're the nearest MLS team. So that should be exciting. In terms of who do I think is likely to win MLS Cup this year, it's kind of the usual suspects. I think the weird thing about having Cincinnati and St. Louis finish top of the table in their respective divisions is both teams should be really happy to be there and should, of course, they're planning to win it all, But I think, like, there's no shame for either team to cash out their chips a little bit early because they've accomplished so much this season. Cincinnati should be really proud. So I think this is actually a really good year for Columbus to win it all. I think it's a good year for Philadelphia to win it all, considering how they went out last year, although they're not as strong a team as they used to be. If you want a really good rundown of everything, Joe Lowry does a really quick, it's the opposite version of this podcast and of Extra Time. Extra Time goes on and on and on about a bunch of teams you don't care about. Holding the High Line goes on and on and on about a team you care about. Joe Lowry does about a 7 to 9 minute podcast about teams you care about really quickly. Highly recommended. Really enjoy it. You definitely should consider that. But if you want, he does a nice description of what makes Philadelphia strong and what makes them weak. And then my other favorite for the playoffs that I will be watching closely will be the Red Bulls, because they've never won it. And to win coming out of the 8 position would both be great for Red Bull fans, but also more importantly be vindication that this playoff format is absolute garbage, because in a season at which they probably don't deserve to be in the playoffs, if they win the whole darn thing, it would just be great, great, fodder for us to talk about in the offseason.
What are they? The Arizona Diamondbacks, Mark? The only other two things that I'll add, Rabbi. I'd like for the HTHL Union to unanimously vote that regardless of teams, we are rooting for Dominic Baggi in these MLS Cup playoffs.
Oh, nice. Yeah, with Cincinnati, right?
So we're all rooting for Dom Baggi, who's already won the Supporters' Shield. We would love to see him lift an MLS Cup and score in a final, obviously. But I think the other team, Mark, to your point about rooting against Real Salt Lake, I think if there's a solid dark horse in this one, I want to say that it's the Houston Dynamo. They ended the season on a really good run of form and everything. What they've done, it's a fantastic turnaround for them from a season standpoint. I think they've got a favorable matchup, being the higher seeded team against Real Salt Lake. I'm not sure that anybody else in the Western Conference really is convincing outside of the Seattle Sounders. St. Louis has not been good to end their stretch. I'm not convinced by any of the lower seeded teams. Everybody else kind of backed in or, hobbled their way into the playoffs. And then the only other one that I would have, who am I missing here, Mark? It would be, I think LAFC's a lesser version of themselves. And then I think Seattle would be the one, just because they know how to win come October and November in this league. And they are still relatively healthy. And I do think having Sao Paulo back is going to be really big for them. So we'll see what happens with that. But obviously we're not going to be talking about the playoffs because the Rapids are not in the playoffs. Mark, let's do this. Let's do one final game recap for you listeners. This past Saturday at Dick's Sporting Goods Park in Commerce City, Colorado, the Rapids played their fourth competitive game of the year against Real Salt Lake, and they lost 1-0. Not going to go over a lot of macro stuff with you folks. Not going to go over a bunch of individual chances. This game was as Cole Bassett put it, a perfect summation or microcosm of their season. They had a decent first half where they're on the front foot. They created several chances. They did not finish any of those chances. They came out a little flat to start the second half. RSL, the opponent, got one really good opportunity. You could argue that it was fortuitous. You could argue they got a little bit of help from the officiating, and they ended up scoring on that. And the Rapids tried furiously to come back in a couple half chances. Kevin Cabral missing the best opportunity, of course, and the Rapids ended up losing 1-0. And maybe the one joy that you had, regardless of this defeat, for me, Mark, was the fact that the game ended, or at one point, there were 5 homegrowns on the field together. I'm still working with Emilio Gonzalez to confirm this, Mark, but that has to be a record. I think when there was a 4th homegrown, when Darren Yapi stepped on the field as a substitute in the second half, that probably already set a new record. But you had Abraham Rodriguez getting his first start in MLS play for the team. His only other appearance would have been at Portland last year for the back half of the second half after William Yarbrough sustained a concussion, and those were the only MLS minutes that Abrod had gotten, and he started and looked the part. Mark, where do you want to start with good things on this 4th loss in a calendar year to FSL?
The good thing is the team generated a lot of expected goals, 2.14. They had some really nice chances. There was that early Jonathan Lewis break and shot. There was a late chance by, I think, Kevin Cabral in this one that went begging. That was frustrating. The early shot was by Jonathan Lewis, was worth 0.20 expected goals in the 16th minute. So that was nice. Rafael Navajo created a bunch of different chances that had some good looks, and so did Andreas Maxu, who had a shot off a corner that got saved. That was the best opportunity. You know, Cole Bassett had a big shot from outside the box that kind of like scared everybody, but wasn't and one from the edge of the box. But you know, producing chances is, I think, one of the challenges this team has had this year that they haven't been super great at. So you know, letting it fly, getting going, giving it their best shot was a good way to go. So that was, I think, our best thing. I think the other thing was just looking at who was in the lineup and who got to play was really great. It's great to have Sebastian Anderson get a full 89 minutes of play. Abrod looked pretty comfortable out there. I think people are finally are starting to notice that he's kind of diminutive. He's about 5'8", I believe. But
listed at 5'9", Mark, and as someone who stood next to him with both of us wearing dress shoes on Sunday at a Burgundy affair, can confirm that's a accurate description.
Right, but also knowing that you know, one of the greatest goalkeepers in MLS history, who played for RSL, is also not that tall, so height doesn't matter that much. Ollie Leroy's getting on the field was great. I was super disappointed that he didn't start, though. You know, Darren Yappe getting back on the field after having not played a whole lot lately was also really important. So, you know, some good things to note, and possibly Chris Little's final game as the manager of the Colorado Rapids, also something to note. Matt, what'd you say was your good stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I just the young kids and really how they played and how they didn't look out of place, Mark. You know, before that, Jonathan Lewis open chance that got set up really well by some good passing. You know, there was that opportunity for Danny Musovski where Alexander Kai kind of, you know, has a really great run in behind, and the Rapids kind of look and think that it's offsides and they have to play catch up, and the ball comes in and Abrod has to make a point blank save. He had a couple of other really good, you know, chances that he had to parry away. And maybe the only one that I was a little bit disappointed with, I think it was in the second half. I think it was Diego Luna who eventually scored the only goal of this game, and Abrod kind of had to stretch out and make the save, and he didn't put the rebound in a good place. There wasn't an RSL player around there. I don't think there was another one in the box outside of the shooter. and so then there were two Rapids defenders who thought to go for it, but then Abrod was able to get to it. But I'll highlight for Abrod listeners what I've been saying for what the 3-4 games that Sebi's gotten towards the end of the season. 90 minutes through and Abrod looked the part. Distribution was decent, not great from what I could hear from up in the press box, which wasn't a whole lot given the crowd that you had. And Mark, those RSL fans were, that's the loudest that I've heard a traveling RSL contingency. Wow. Since pre-COVID. But from what I could hear, his communication was as good and as frequent and organizing and positive as I have heard from him at Rapids 2 games, where it's much easier to hear what Abrod is saying, whether they're playing at DSG or in front of, you know, a couple hundred people at DU. He did not look out of place. And on the one play that you would say was not his fault, that was a negative for the team, it was on the goal that was conceded, where, you know, I think it was a fortuitous, it was opportunism by Luna, the goal scorer. It was maybe Moise Bombito not reacting well enough after he went to ground, and then maybe a poor decision by the official to not give a foul there. I have not seen, Mark, a good angle that shows that the ball went out of bounds, so I'm inclined to give the officials the benefit of doubt in that one. But for me, you know, is that usually called a foul? Yes, looking at how small and not large Diego Luna is versus how tall Moise Bombito is and the way that he was almost goading the foul and everything, I could see an argument behind the official not giving it, but you know, it is what it is. But so back to my original point, the one play that was negative that Abrod could have done something about was the one that you did not fault him on. And similarly, I would say there's been no play that I've seen in Sebastian Anderson's, you know, 3 games that he's gotten, you know, almost 390 minutes performance. You know, obviously he was subbed out in garbage time of this game in which he has looked out of place, to where if you told me, if you swapped out Sebastian Anderson for Keegan Rosenberry in those games, Mark, and if we swapped out A-Rod for either William Yarbrough or Marco Ilicha in that, I would have said, yeah, they played fine. They weren't spectacular, but they didn't do anything wrong. Moving on. And so to say that about young kids who haven't gotten those opportunities in the past, who've gotten those opportunities because of what they've done for R2 or ways in which they've been better, or if this is all just secretly the Chris Little effect, as Braden Norse from the Denver Sports Magazine might say, I think is absolutely a positive. And hopefully this is something that all these young players can carry forward. Mark, we've been very critical, but I think fair of Ralph Priso at times this season. And I've thought, you know, he's come off the bench a few times for the Rapids under Chris Little and has been totally fine. I thought he was okay. He's still not great in possession. There's still times from a positioning standpoint that he's a concern. But he's been better under Chris Little than I think he was earlier in the middle third of the season when they were losing, and he was regularly getting minutes and regularly making mistakes under Robin Fraser. Cole Bassett, still one of the only, you know, exciting, regularly goal dangerous players for the Rapids. Maybe the one thing that I have to say about this, Mark, is given the game didn't matter, it wasn't as quite play your kidsy as I was expecting. I would agree with you. I would have liked to have seen Ollie start in that middle next to Connor Ronan and see what they could do together. I'm never going to complain about two ginger D-mids in a double pivot, obviously. And then it would have been nice to, but in lieu of that, it would have been nice to see Ollie and Yapi get come off the bench earlier in the game. But that's all I really have to say from a personnel standpoint. Mark, let's move on to bad things. I already kind of talked about all the bad things that happened around the goal, some of which I don't think the Rapids had control over. Anything that you want to say specifically that was bad about this game, or does it not even matter because, you know, it was game 34, Rapids were always going to lose this game, who cares?
Well, they didn't win, so that matters. I mean, I did kind of think they had a chance in this one because they had young players, but yeah, I mean, I think that Kevin Cabral missed late just kind of like set me off. I was just kind of like, really? Are you kidding me? Can this guy ever do anything?
Nope.
It was so frustrating, and I'm like, I thought that I had stopped caring about Kevin Cabral being disappointing, but apparently I still care. So, and I think I'm worried about it for next year. I'm severely worried that, like, he did the same thing for the Galaxy last year, which is hog the ball and not convert. And then he did that this year. So it's a position that I'm seriously concerned about. But yeah, so I guess that was my only main thing, since and also just wanting the young players to get more time for Ollie LaRaz to start. But, you know, I get it. Ollie LaRaz had a busy season for R2. He doesn't have anything to prove by getting out there and getting another start for the Rapids. So, it was just for pride. Your thoughts?
Rafael Navajo does a number of things very well. Right. What he does from a physicality standpoint, particularly when he's been isolated with two or at times three center backs or a D mid in there, is incredibly difficult, and I think he has dealt with that well, given that Brazil is not as physical of a league as Major League Soccer is, and Brazil is officiated differently than MLS is. I still think he does a lot of really good stuff in terms of the buildup, in terms of him being given the ball because it's the easiest outlet, and then having a difficult situation and escaping from that, or just not immediately giving it away, unlike certain French designated players who are being played at as a false nine earlier in the season. And I still think he does a very good job in terms of his link-up play, in terms of getting the ball easily to a teammate who then it's easy for them to then do something with the ball, rather than a pass that's slightly off then puts them in a precarious situation or turns into a 50-50 with an opponent as well. He's a guy who's easy to play with. He's a guy who makes it easier on you when you are trying to get him the ball. He is a guy who makes it easier on you as a teammate when he is trying to get the ball to you. That being said, I still don't think he's been goal dangerous enough. A lot of that is on the team right around him. Mark, we could put Lionel Messi or Zlatan Ibrahimovic or Erling Haaland in this team, and they would struggle at times just due to the fact that so much of what they have to create is entirely or mostly on their own. That being said, yeah. The one chance you didn't mention, Mark, was, I think it was 14th minute, it was in the first half, and he kind of had that open header that was really well set up, and he just missed it. And there was room at the far post where Navajo was at, or there was even time for him to maybe take a touch and then try and go for something. Though I think Justin Glad and Zach McMath would have been in his kitchen at that point. And so just to see a guy who, you know, still he hasn't had a good game mark in his time at the Rapids in terms of just the wow, he was really dangerous. He was creating a bunch of chances. He was a live wire. He was a problem in the box, regardless of the fact that he just has the two goal contributions, that really great pass to Calvin Harris on the winner against New England, and then the poacher's goal that he got, you know, the other day in Houston. He hasn't put together a good 90 minutes or even a good half in terms of what he did in the final third, or specifically what he did in the box. And yeah, I'd be saying something completely different if he finished that header, but you know, he has scored a goal. He's acclimated off the field. You know, he seemed super friendly when I went up and spoke to him, obviously through the translator at a Burgundy affair. He seems to get on with his teammates. I'm really curious to ask him about this the next time that I interview him, Mark, of how his energy is a mentality of, like, he's clearly showing in his body language that he wants to be here, and there's a mentality of, like, wanting to be part of the solution. And I'm genuinely wondering where that is coming from, or what it was about the Rapids that made it such an appealing project for him to come to and everything. The one key variable that we have there, Mark, is the one of the strikers that was ahead of him at Palmeiras is in this. It's been confirmed that that player is going to Real Madrid in the winter. It's a 35 million euro initial fee, and then I think 25 million in add-ons. That was originally reported by The Athletic, so maybe those numbers are off, or maybe I'm misremembering the currency. Let me make sure. I want to make sure I get which one it is. It's the one with the E with his last name. Endrick, Mark. And he's a 16-year-old striker, and he was one of the ones that was ahead of him. So, yes. Brazilian Serie A attack certainly going on there. But I think Navajo will be back, Mark. I do think there's a good foundation there, but obviously we need to see him hit the ground running in terms of goal scoring for, I think, him to validate that he's worth the 4.5 million and for, you know, that to be a worthwhile investment. If nothing else, he's certainly been better than Sidney Tavares, Mark, who was not even in the squad for this game. Man, I think it's just really disappointing that he had that sickness. I think it was cramps, or it had something to do with his hydration marker, like getting adjusted to altitude, just did not settle in well. So maybe it was altitude sickness that he was actually dealing with, which I'm actually maybe a little bit more empathetic to than it being a stomach bug that had him out for 4 weeks and everything. But again, acclimatized off the field, obviously no language barrier for Sydney in the ways that there is for Navajo. You know, just hoping that he can hit the ground running. But in terms of when they came in, this being a period for them to get acclimated and get settled and everything,
right,
we didn't see as much as maybe was needed or wanted on the field. That is a concern that I'm putting a pin in for next season. I look forward to being proven wrong and to writing about it.
Well, I'll just add that the MLS salary numbers came out finally. They were listed as the September 15th numbers, but they didn't come out till October, I think, because MLS and the Players Association were trying to figure out exactly how to explain how much Lionel Messi made. That was kind of the rumor, but in the end, Messi makes about 20 million a year on the books anyways. Tavares is making $750,600, which makes him, I think, the fourth most expensive player on the Rapids. Fifth most expensive player on the Rapids. Fourth most expensive. Kevin Cabral, Rafael Navajo, Andreas Maxu, and then it's Sidney Tavares. And so based on that, that's kind of, I think, the part that makes fans and folks who are thinking about the Colorado Rapids really concerned, which is, it's okay to have a miss on a player you bring in on a loan mid-season. It's not okay to have a miss on a loan for a guy who's that expensive. That would be a big miss if the Rapids wind up missing on it.
Yeah, and then just to confirm, Mark, we now have the highest paid player in terms of how much the Rapids are paying him is Rafael Navajo with a guaranteed annual compensation of $1.43 million. And off the top of my head, Mark, I believe the only players that would have made more in club history are Skelshen Gashi, 1.65, and then Tim Howard, 2.4, 2.5. I might be misremembering those numbers by a couple $100,000. So that's nothing to snuff at in ways, Mark, that I think if you're saying that Sidney Tavares is more a young player upside, already can easily go back to Europe because of his passport situation and everything, possibly on the outside looking in for one of the youth national teams for Portugal as well. You know, but to your point, Mark, you can't miss on both those guys. You miss on both those guys. That is a sunk cost from a salary standpoint that the Rapids can't afford to not be having as a productive player. And then just the other thing as well from a salary standpoint, Mark, with those numbers coming out, I guess we'll transition into those unless Rabbi, did you have a big thing? Just the only other thing that I had was I was so relieved at the full-time whistle, just like, thank God this season is over. That day in Burgundy Affair for me felt like last day of school, and it's very clear, as we'll come on to a couple minutes, there's a lot of people who aren't going to be here next year. They're graduating or whatever the soccer player equivalent of that is, and then just the relief of it being over. But I don't think it can be understated, Mark, regardless of this game being irrelevant from a standing standpoint, the Rapids had four games against RSL this season. Three of them were at home. They lost all four of them, and the aggregate score was 7-2. That's unacceptable.
You just made me want to pull up the 2018 senior roster and salary. Tim Howard made 2.475 that year, so $2.475,000. Skelshen Gashi made $1.668 million that year. Lowest paid player that year, Kip Colvey, with $67,000 on the year. Kip Colvey. I take that back. He wasn't the lowest paid player because the minimum that year was $54,000, and Ricardo Perez made $54,254.
I have no idea who that is, Mark. I do not remember that person. You could be joshing me right now and just making up a name that sounds plausibly like an MLS bench guy, and I would be none the wiser.
He made zero appearances and was a homegrown for the Rapids. Oof. So midfielder, and I have no recollection of him whatsoever. Although I will throw out another name from 2018 that you will remember, who was on $65,000 for the year. Mike DeFont.
Oh, Mike DeFont
with the Colorado Rapids that year. That's a name that you want to forget as soon as you hear it.
So much dude bro hair gel and just the weirdest game face. Okay, let's move on. So Mark, the other salary things to note, I don't know if this is relevant because he is out of contract, and we already knew this because of his salary being reported, albeit as a member of the Columbus Crew earlier this year. But Luis Diaz on $500,000 and guaranteed compensation, $534,000. And then Andrew Gutman, an absolute steal for me, Mark, making $381K on the year, and he will be in his last year of his contract for the Rapids in 2024. Mark, you could up him to $500K right now, Mark, with a contract extension, and I would not complain at all about having Andrew Gutman in the left back position for the Burgundy Boys for the next 3 to 4 years minimum. And then what was the other new player that we had as well, Mark? And then we did not previously have Daniel Chacon because the MLS Next Pro contracts are not revealed, Mark, but we now know that Chacon's MLS compensation will be $75K. Presumably that's what it'll be or around there for next year. I think totally fine based on where he is from an age profile, and that's not a huge hit given that obviously he'll miss the first half of the season due to that ACL tear he suffered on loan with Alajuelense. And then I think there was one more, Mark. We already knew Danny Leyva was on a little over $200K. He's obviously, his loan's expired, and I don't think he'll be back with the Rapids in any way. There's one more. Marko Ilić had a slight pay raise, folks. He's now to just over, he's to 442K a year. That's slightly more than he was when it was reported, when the salaries were reported in the spring. That is because that was previously on a loan deal, and this is his new permanent contract. So a slight pay raise there, Mark. But if we get William Yarbrough production out of him, I'm not complaining about that salary. Yarbrough was on 475 as well. So I think that does it for salary compensation. Mark, given two big tweets that we had within 24 hours of the Rapids game going full-time on Saturday, shall we talk about player departures?
You get the honor of breaking the bad news to the four Rapids fans who listened to this podcast who didn't really know about our two of our favorite players going away.
Yeah, so Mark, with or listeners, within 5 minutes of the full-time whistle blowing, Diego Rubio tweets out a photo of him over the concourse, the upper concourse on the north side of Dick's Sporting Goods Park during the game, and the tweet reads, "Thank you, Colorado, my family and I will miss you!" Exclamation, and then three red heart emojis, and then this would have been just before 2 p.m. on the following Sunday, so just a few hours before a Burgundy affair, Mark, Jack Price tweets out, "Thank you, Colorado Rapids fans, heart emoji. Me and my family have had the best 6 years. The support and love shown towards us from day one has been top class. Wish the lads all the success in the future." Soccer ball emoji, fist pump emoji, an honor and immense pride to captain this club for 4 years. Praying hands, blessing hands emoji, heart emoji, cheers, pricey, handshake emoji. So, Mark, just an absolute, like, just a punch in the gut. I was so looking forward to just going to a Burgundy affair, doing this podcast with you, Mark, tweeting out the podcast and everything, and then logging off Twitter. And these two players, apparently of their own accord, Mark, it's my understanding their representation was not aware that they were going public with this, revealing that they will not be back at the club. I had an article on this up at Burgundy Wave, if listeners want to check it out, kind of speculating what's going on. Diego Rubio is eligible for free agency for the first time in his MLS career. Mark, I have to imagine there's an MLS team that would be willing to pay him at or close to what the Rapids were paying him that has a much better chance of winning something in 2024. I have to imagine there are other MLS teams more desperate for an attacking player, you know, who gave the Rapids since 2018, 38 goals and 26 assists. There's a team that's willing to give him the bag. And of course, there's already rumors going out that Colo-Colo is looking to bring him back as well. So Mark, he's got three, I think, really good options here. Either make as much money as he was getting or take a maybe a discount to go to a contender, go to a team that's going to pay him what he feels that he is worth, or take the family back to Chile. All three of those options, I think, are better than probably staying at the Rapids for a rebuild, given what I think the financial implications were going to be at the Rapids. I don't have a sense of who, the report out from the Chilean outlet that was reporting on Colo-Colo did add some nuance to this, saying that Rubio was informed by the club that they would not be pursuing re-signing him, so that could be a club decision. I have not gotten confirmation that it was one side or the other in terms of Jack Price's departure. I have to think on some level, though, Rabbi, it was mutual. There's obviously some family stuff. Jack has, you know, a young family going on. Hugo's, I think, 2-3 years old now. And then obviously he's very close with his family. And, you know, that distance was not a problem at times, Mark, but, you know, I could see every single time I was at training and I knew that Pricey's parents were in town or coming into town, how excited or how much more pep that he had in his step. And I think it should be obvious to listeners who follow Debbie Price, Jack's mom, on Twitter, how important family is to him and the opportunity to go back to the Midlands, Mark. I think certainly there's a club in the championship that would take a flyer on him come January. There's absolutely opportunities in League One. There were several quote tweets from Jack Price's tweet on Sunday afternoon from Salop fans from Shropshire, from Shrewsbury Town fans already saying that that, you know, they would like to see him back there in League One, Mark. So that's certainly an option as well. Jack Price will have options. I think on some level it was kind of a mutual, now's a really good time for me to go back home and finish my career there. You maybe have some doubts about what I'm doing from a rehab standpoint, and Connor Ronan's done a fantastic job. Maybe you like Ralph Prizzo, maybe you like something else. There's a new coach coming in, unless he really absolutely loves and wants me based on what you think you're doing in terms of that hiring position. You know, maybe it's best for us to just, you know, say, hey, thanks for the memories. We'll always have 2021 Set Piece Kings FC. And, you know, let me go back and get things sorted. And I don't think he will have any issue being employed come January, Mark, assuming that the rehab continues in that way. And I have to think with how much goodwill he has at Wolves that he'll, you know, get the he'll get a key to the training facility and be able to train with them, even though they're in the Premier League and everything. So Jack Price should be back up to fitness for me, folks, certainly by middle of January. And then at that point, since he'll have been a free agent since before that window opens, he can sign with any team, no issues from a paperwork standpoint there, and he can go back, live in the Midlands, be happy and everything. And there's a bunch of teams in that area that are that are in the right area geographically where I think he and his family could be close together, and that would be at the right tier in terms of what he's looking for in terms of competition, in terms of compensation and everything. And Mark, I look forward to him landing somewhere and just, you know, being happy and finding joy in football in ways that I don't know that he had really the last year, 18 months or so. And I'd say the same thing about Diego, Mark. It's just the reality is I still think there's a very real possibility that Diego is somewhere in MLS. And if there's anybody that's going to show up salty and ball out to beat the Rapids, I think Diego Rubio is going to enjoy his revenge at the Richard in 2024 if he's here. Mark, there will be a time for us to, I think, look back properly on both of these players and their time as a member of the Rapids. So I don't know. We don't want to go fully into Jack Price and Diego Rubio memorial episode, but things that you would like to say about their departure, what this means for the club.
It's a big loss. There's no way around it. I mean, these two are the kind of guys you sell the club on, the kind of thing that your season ticket sales guys call up season ticket holders with for the next coming year and say, just want to remind you that Diego Rubio is going to be back in Burgundy and Jack Price will be the captain of the team. You know, like what do you tell people about next year? Like Jack Price, unfortunately, had 2 years filled with injury. So, but he had that, you know, affable, outgoing, winning smile. And, you know, he was always a favorite with me and you as an interview. I mean, there was nobody, there was nobody I was happier to grind through transcription software failures with than Jack Price. Transcription software did not understand what that man was saying.
I think this was 2018, 2019. I was speaking to a club staffer about that, and they said the only accent it had, like could do nothing with was Jack Price's Moner accent. Like they'd have to go through and comb through it twice for the Scots, more so for Danny Wilson than Sam Nicholson, actually. But like there was nobody else. You plug in audio from Jack Price into AI and you say translate this into English words and it's spitting out gibberish.
Oh, I would have to listen to certain things he said in an interview 6 times before I got it right. And even then I would be like, I might be fudging this one a little bit. So
we still don't know, Mark, if technically the first time that Jack Price said it, if Scottish salmon is a verb or is a noun. And that speaks to the wonderful obscurity. And you didn't understand what he was saying, but you felt and you could get what the message was and understand and appreciate that. And that was one of the beauties of Jack Price's communication.
So there's that. And then there's the practical application of the fact that, to be very blunt, and I literally haven't thought about this till you asked me, Matt, the entire club identity for the last 2 years has been those two guys. It was those two guys and a bunch of warm bodies in the field, or a bunch of, not to be cruel, they're not warm bodies, but replaceable parts, in that they were the other players on the field gave you things that were replicable by anyone else in MLS. Diego Rubio created goals at a huge rate last year for this team when they weren't getting goals anywhere. And he was one of the first big goal scorers first big goal scorer for the Colorado Rapids since Connor Casey, a name so far gone that most of our listeners vaguely have heard of him, but probably have never laid eyes on him, unless you were an OG hardcore. And then Jack Price, I mean, what he was able to do on dead ball situations and from corner kicks helped define the Rapids. If you ask Matt Doyle, expert on all things Major League Soccer for the league, how the Rapids overperformed expectation in 2016, how they overperformed expectation in 2020 and 2021. Set pieces. Jack Price's ability to deliver a ball front post, back post, or to exactly the right spot was a huge addition for this team. When he was out in 2022, things were really, really bad for the Rapids. They just absolutely could not find anyone who could deliver balls from the corner like him. Brian Acosta was kind of put in, and I remember interviewing Jack Price, and he said nice things about Acosta, but the reality was Acosta, I think, put in one assist that was on a corner kick that entire year, maybe two, and Jack Price had 12 the year before that. So that's scary, Matt. I mean, those two guys are basically reasons the team won the last couple of years. Now you've got to create a totally new identity around this team. And I don't know what that identity is. I don't know if they are going for like-for-like replacements where they look for a big goal scorer and someone who is a set-piece specialist, or if you are trying to bring on a new coach, bring on two new big, well-paid players who have their own, you know, top-notch S-tier level abilities that can help make this team, you know, go. Because right now there's nobody on this roster who is a dominant player who has a clear stamp on the game that will do things. I mean, you've got some really good players, but who are like effectively role or supporting players. Like Cole Bassett is a solid, you know, number eight type player or shuttler in 4-1-2-1-2 diamond. That's what his role is. He can't be your primary goal scorer. He's not your killer stopper at the six, or at least he hasn't been asked to be. Then you've got a couple of defenders who are exciting, fun defenders, but they're not going to define how the team plays. Like Andrew Gutman is a good pick, no pun intended, at left back. He solidifies that spot. And I think Sebastian Anderson might be the solution at right back going forward. But you don't win games with your left and right back, and especially not those two guys in particular, because they're not offensive wingback types. They're not DeAndre Yedlin's. They're not Sergino Dest's. They're much more traditional stay-at-home defenders. So those are huge questions. Those are big problems. The two guys the Rapids brought in on loan, Navajo and Tavares, haven't been those guys yet. So who will define the identity of this team going forward without Jack Price and without Diego Rubio?
And on top of that, Mark, let's not forget that William Yarbrough is also out of contract and had that injury to finish the season. And so I think if you were to say somebody besides Price and Rubio, Mark, who for the last 2 years, 3 years was such a big part of this team's identity, I would include Yarbrough in there. I'd say he'd be third on that list between him, Rubio, and Price. And I think it's incredibly cruel, Mark, that now the final appearances that you had in Burgundy for these three players potentially are Jack Price tearing his Achilles against Minnesota United 7 minutes into subbing in back in, you know, what was, I think that was March. It might've been late February at the time. Diego Rubio starting and then being a early second half sub in Houston, in which the team got schwacked 5-1. And they're potentially William Yarbrough's final game for the Colorado Rapids was getting shelled by Toluca, where none of those goals were really his fault as well. And so for three guys who were a massive part of this team, Jack Price, who is up there in terms of the sixes that we cheer to, Diego Rubio, who was the only other attacking player, Mark, I think you can say in the history of the club that was better or had a better individual season or was more impactful, was Connor Casey. That is saying something. Jack Price, like the D-mids that you're talking about are better than him in terms of their club pedigree, what they did. We are talking Mastroeni, Laurentiewicz, Marcelo Balboa, if we're counting him as a D-man as opposed to a center back. I know he played in both of those positions as well. Like Mark, I would say Jack Price's legacy as a D-mid is better than what Sam Cronin and what Michael Azira were, for example. And then William Yarbrough, who just earlier this year set a broke the clean sheet record for the club as well, and the three of them potentially going out on a whimper, hurt and then going somewhere else where potentially at least two of them could be hurting the Rapids is just, you know, incredibly cruel to the narrative of what they've meant to this club and what they mean to this community. So I guess let's come on to that, Mark. One other thing, as I've reported that I have on very good authority, Mark, is that Jonathan Lewis, even though he is guaranteed for 2024, will not be back with the club. He will likely be traded within the league and most likely to an Eastern Conference team. Mark, he had one goal in MLS play this year. I think we can say that the young potential player that the Rapids got, who is looking for minutes and hoping to come into something that had European and national team potential, hasn't really achieved itself. I think, unfortunately, Johnny, I think we can now say, Mark, at his age and what he hasn't done, is that he's a speed merchant. He's in the Kakuta Mane or the Dominic Oduro mold more so than he is some of the other attackers where speed is their thing, but then they have a finishing touch as well. And he'll go somewhere else where I think he's probably a sub option. I wouldn't be shocked if he goes to Orlando, being originally from Florida. I do not know that there's room for him on Inter-Miami squad with what they're going to be next year, Mark. I would not hate Rubio coming on and then being somewhere in that front four for Atlanta if they sell Thiago Almada for a bunch of money in January and then have Lewis as a super sub, similar to what Derek Etienne was, but maybe less hated by the 17s. But Mark, your thoughts on Jonathan Lewis joining the departures for this season?
Yeah, addition by subtraction. I mean, he did add a lot, but I think the lack of playing time he had down the stretch shows what the coaching staff thinks of him, which is, I think they eventually came around to what you and I were saying at the beginning of the season, because they started listening to this podcast and picking up valuable tips about how to, I'm just kidding. But yeah, he's a one-dimensional player. It's been pretty evident for about two seasons now. I think three seasons ago, we were hyped up on him. But you know, that's interesting. I think what you raised for me though was interesting very briefly is just that, you know, Jack Price had another year, according to my records, on his deal.
So, he had an option for
20. Yeah, so, oh, you think it was an option?
It was an option.
Oh, wow. So, so I guess that means that, when they let him go, that everybody agreed that, or at least the club had told him, like, you know, you won't be back. So, so anyways, I think that's interesting in terms of, like, knowing that it was a choice that somebody, or at least one side, had to make or the other. But yeah, so, you know, Lewis, and I think the other thing that I've noticed about the overall roster is it doesn't have as much flexibility as I would want it to. A couple of years ago, in the year after Tim Howard and the year after that, there were a lot of contracts that were coming off the books. There are not a lot of contracts coming off the books, but it doesn't mean that there won't be a lot of changes. There's a lot of opportunities for wheeling and dealing in the offseason for the Rapids. There are a lot of players who have, their contracts end in 2024, so they're a little bit easier to move. There's some contracts that are tougher to move that are a big disappointment. Alex Gerstbach had an injured year, but didn't look very good at the beginning of the season. He's signed through 2025 and is, you know, basically here, whether we like it or not. Kevin Cabral is signed through 2025 and no one is going to touch him with a 10-foot pole. Your option for Kevin Cabral next year is play him, sit him, or cut him. Those are it, because nobody's buying him. even at the deal that the Galaxy got from the Rapids, which is we'll pay half his salary, you know, the Rapids couldn't do that with anybody. Nobody's going to pay $400,000, I think, for Kevin Cabral. And then you've got the most complicated of all dead money contracts, which is Max Alves. I think that's a really interesting one to watch. It's not a lot of money. It's not that he's costing a lot. He is taking up your U22 young money slot, which is a bummer if you want to use that. But Alves, as a player who you cannot play because he is involved in an ongoing criminal investigation in Brazil, that, to me, Matt, that has to be resolved in the offseason. You cannot have a player going into the year where the Players Association, the league, are basically like, well, innocent till proven guilty. He's got to, you know, we've got to resolve it. You know, I think that's got to be a situation where either the team or the league says to Alves, like, you just can't be here. You know, like, you need to get this resolved. And if it's not resolved amicably, you can play back in Brazil and your contract is voided for the coming year. It's not just money. It's the roster spot and the value of just having another guy on the roster, who is, by the way, an international spot that's being taken up. So there are a lot of reasons why there need to be some positions with resolution. Max is the most important.
Yeah, but on the other end, Marcus, someone in the analytics team, or as Porik Smith would say, or at least would consciously think but not say out loud to people like you or me, which is, you know, they have $1 million in a transfer fee, roughly, reportedly, invested in that asset. And mm-hmm. that's still a young player who they think, on the whole of the crew, still has tremendous upside. The fact that he's coming from Brazil, the pathway to Europe and everything, if he were to get things right. I think there's a very easy argument, Mark, that his best two games that he played for the Rapids were the two games before all the news broke and he got removed from team activities as well. So it's the, do you cut bait on that to then create potential to bring in somebody new? And in doing so, that $1 million becomes a sunk cost. And what does that look like financially, given whatever conversations people in the front office are having with KSC? Or as, you know, Josh Kroenke, I don't know if you saw, Mark, but Josh came down to the DNVR bar to do the Nugget show.
I heard, and nobody was allowed to ask him anything about the Rapids, or there was a general sense that that was improper.
Yeah, and so, you know, if Josh Kroenke has time, Mark, to do, you know, a media roundtable as if he's, you know, releasing a book that's going to be on the Oprah Winfrey best-selling list, and then bring the Larry O'Brien trophy with him, like, does he not have 30 minutes or an hour to do media availability, or at least do a live stream on the Rapids account, or at least have a conversation about Max and what that would mean from a financial standpoint? I want to believe so. I've been told by multiple people, Mark, that Josh is going to be more hands-on for the coaching search and for what's going on in and around the club, and that that's been a reaction to the various things that have happened this season. I will believe it when I see it, and I can completely understand, and I think fans are completely valid in looking at anything that we hear about what's going on with ownership from someone else at KSC or from someone at the Rapids with a pinch of salt, given that it could be a filtered or a curated version of the truth. So we'll see. But Mark, let's go through, you know, I've got the list of players up for an option right now. We can go through them really quickly. We'll start with the team options. Andrew Gutman, Mark, no question. We're picking that up. Yes,
for sure.
William Yarbrough, Mark, I have long sensed, and I've gotten the hint that I think as soon as they were able to secure Marco Ilicha long term, that is the player that they believe in and they think has more upside, has more potential, is obviously younger. It doesn't have the injury history that Yarbrough now has with the MCL injury that ended Yarbrough's season. I do think that Marco had, like a number of other players, had a good run towards the end of the season that may help him, maybe the foundation for him next year as well. Mark, I would almost be willing to bet money that in July, when Ilicha became permanent, that the Rapids had already decided what they're doing. I believe that William Yarbrough, just like Price and Rubio, will not be returning to the club.
Yes, and also Adam Beaudry is 17 years old and is tearing it up in R2 and with the U17s. So I think, and by U17s, I mean both the Rapids U17 and the U.S. Youth National U17, and he's going to be playing, I think, this week in some U17 matches. So even if you don't think Abroad is the future of this club, I think Adam Beaudry is, and it's time to maybe give him a shot. I mean, Gaga Slonina was only, I think, 19 when he came up for Chicago. So now is pretty close to the time where you want to make some room for another goalkeeper.
Yeah, and then one other note on that, Mark, since you mentioned the U17s, Beaudry, and then Zachary
Campagnolo,
both got the nod for the U.S. men's national team for the U17 World Cup squad. They will be in Group E with Korea, France, and Burkina Faso. I would favor, Mark, the U.S. to get out of that group. Their first group stage game is November 12th in Indonesia. Mark, anything in your spreadsheet that we should know about Campagnolo?
Campagnolo, he also got a call up in the last camp But yeah, I don't have a whole lot of information on him. He is, his birth date is March 12th, and he was with the Academy U-17s this past year. He got a youth call up at the beginning of 2023. That's all I got on him. I hope I get out to see him at some point. The only team that I got to watch this year was the U-15s. I got to watch a little bit in training the GA Cup, the MLS Next GA Cup. So the only thing that's notable about that group is Noah Chavarria, I believe, is the younger brother of Keith Chavarria. But yeah, that's all I got for us. Also on that U-15s team, although he didn't go with them to the GA Cup, was Cohen Vines. Cohen is, of course, the younger brother of Sam Vines. And there's a middle brother named Jeremiah Vines. So, Jeremiah's with the U-17s also. So a lot of brothers.
More players to go through. Mark, I think he's played his way into getting this, guaranteed regardless of the coaching situation, Sebastian Anderson.
Yeah, for sure. I think, he definitely gets back. Yeah, I have him as having a club option for 2024. So you definitely want to exercise that. And you probably even want to do the, exercise the option, or don't even exercise the option, renegotiate the whole contract for a 2 or 3 year deal so that you can get a couple of years. Sebastian Anderson is currently 21 years old and will still be 21 on January 1st of 2024 this year.
Two that I'll kind of lump in together because they kind of had similar seasons, Mark. Ralph Preso and Calvin Harris, both on team options as well. Preso, homegrown. Calvin Harris, Generation Adidas. So there's some nuances behind that that are different from a roster standpoint. Harris didn't get a whole lot of playing time to start the season. He worked his way in. He looked better. Still some issues with him being goal dangerous, but he's finally scored some goals. And then Preso, as we mentioned, up and down. Lots of really bad howlers and then some more decent play as well. Mark, I want to say that both of those will be back no matter what, but I would leave it open to, if I was in the front office, I would leave this open to the new head coach who's probably been watching these last couple games to pick up, to make decisions on them and a few other youngsters we'll talk about in a minute.
I like Harris a lot, but I don't know that there's a whole lot of undiscovered aspects to him. He is 23 years old and at the upper end of, he turns 24 in the middle of next season. I don't know that there's a whole lot about Calvin Harris we haven't figured out already. I think he would be a devastatingly talented player in USL, but he's just not quite at an MLS level, in terms of either his technical skills or his physicality to kind of be a striker. And he doesn't quite have any of the other kind of head on a swivel abilities to play a different position. Ralph Preso is still maybe a work in progress. He's only 21 years old, but I've been very disappointed in Preso the last year. And I think that the thing that you want, the only thing that he does incredibly well is cover a lot of ground. He runs really far from one place to another, which is a useful thing for a defensive midfielder, but he doesn't often seem to be doing the right thing in the right place or making the right decision. He's not a competent enough destroyer to be a pure six that can be fantastic. And he's not very good with the ball. His decision making when he forces a turnover or when he comes up with the ball on interception, I find really below average. And I think Major League Soccer has become a league where it used to be a league where a player with a minor flaw or a serious flaw could be accepted if they did four or five other things well. I don't think we're there anymore. I think that was MLS 2.0, where there were some fatally flawed players who you just kind of throw out there and hope they could do the job. We're not there anymore, and he's too mediocre at other things. And that sounds really harsh for a young kid, but I personally, Matt, if it were up to me, I would cut bait on both Calvin Harris and Ralph Preso.
I think one will be back, not both, Mark. I think it will be Calvin Harris, and I'm going to say that contingent upon what my prediction for these next two players that we'll talk about. I lump them together because, again, similarly, they had very similar seasons, balling out with R2, sparing moments with the first team. Oliver Larraz, who was a finalist for MVP in MLS Next Pro and was the best 11, and then Abraham Rodriguez, who obviously played well down the stretch for R2 and then did get the start on decision day. Mark, I think both of these players will be back. I think the club or the new head coach will be choosing Oli Larraz over Ralph Prisso in terms of a roster spot and opportunities with the first team. And I think Abrod will mostly be back on the support of Chris Sharpie. What say you?
Yeah, Larraz's best asset is his homegrown status. I mean, Prisso technically also carries homegrown status, but Larraz is a guy who you can pay, you can give him a 2-year contract, you can keep him at the low end of the salary level, you can use him kind of sparingly as a replacement, 60th minute defensive midfielder or distributive midfielder, box to box kind of guy. And he's going to sit at the very low end of your salary, and he won't even cost you anything at the low end of your salary. So Larraz is like all reward, no risk to some degree. He's just absolutely gravy. You know, there's nothing to worry about him. You could make that argument for Calvin Harris and Ralph Prisso, except I don't think Prisso has been as reliable an asset that you could bring in. He's slightly more expensive. And with Harris, he's older and he's taking up a position that you need a little bit more production at. And additionally, he's a generation Adidas player. So he gives you some salary relief, but not all of the bells and whistles that a homegrown gives you financially. And I think the last thing about Oli Larraz is there's still some possibility that you can sell him on down the road. I don't think there's a lot of likelihood to that. But there's the possibility that if he were to have a gangbusters year and you sold him overseas, that you keep 100% of the profit because it's a homegrown, or 95%. I don't recall the latest rules on homegrown transfer deals.
And then the last player who we haven't discussed, Mark, who has a team option for 2024, Danny Wilson. I reported earlier today, Mark, that Wilson's future is undecided as of right now, or at least it's up in the air. I have to imagine this could come down to the head coach in terms of what he's looking at for his center back options and maybe what he's seen or wants more of from a Mois Bombito. I have no idea about this one, Mark. I think he's on a better contract situation than Lawless Boubacar. I've reported separately that Lawless will be back as well. I think with some of the young center backs that you have coming up, Mark, I think we could either see Danny become a squad player if he is back, or that they cut bait as well. I also have to wonder if maybe his situation with his family of, is this a good time to go back to Scotland? I think he'd go back to he could fit in at a bottom half of the Scottish Premiership, I think, relatively easy. He could go to the Scottish Championship if he wants to. I don't know what the money would look like. I don't think he has a place in going back to Rangers. He's definitely not going to Celtic in that regard. I'm 50-50 on this one, Mark. I have no idea, but I'm also a Danny Wilson homer, so what do I know?
Yeah, I think at the age of 32, he's probably got maybe one or two, maybe three more years left in him at top level soccer. Now's a good time to go back to Scotland, I think, or at least to the UK and play. And I think, you know, being a player with as much MLS experience as he has, he is a tasty option for a lower league in England that, you know, those players, those teams are really, you know, fighting and they need experienced hands who can really do things. And he might be the right guy at the right time for one of them. I think it'd be a good time for him to move on. I think it'd be a good time for the Rapids to move on from him. Not that he doesn't add value to the team, but we've talked about in past years, he doesn't cover a lot of ground. And I believe last year he was rated as the slowest player in Major League Soccer. He makes up for that by positioning acumen and an absolutely deadly ability to get the ball out of the backfield on a long diagonal. But that's, like I said, you know, the Rapids have all these players who, you know, they have this one cool trick, and we don't need one cool trick players. We need guys who can do three things really well, four things really well. going forward. We need a team that has deeper, larger, greater amounts of talent. And those guys also need to be on the younger end of things. If we're going to be, which I think we are, a team that is building for 2025, do not think this team should build itself around trying to, you know, make the playoffs for 2024. Although that's what you're going to hear a lot. Will this team make the playoffs in 2024? I don't care, right? I don't care whether this team makes the playoffs in 2024. Cincinnati did not spend their time building for a playoff quality team. They just went out and spent 2 years building a top-notch team, and then they got themselves to the top of the league. They got themselves a supporter shield. That's what you want to do. You want to have a 2-year plan to make this team, you know, have a shot at a cup. And that's where they need to be. Danny Wilson is not in that plan.
Yep.
And there's a couple other players on this roster who are also not going to be in that plan.
The Rapids right now, Mark, the first team only has 3 players that are technically out of contract. One of them is Diego Rubio. We already know that he is not staying. Mark, we'll touch on this briefly because I think we're both a no on this one. Luis Diaz, haven't seen enough, right?
It was a fund loan, but a fun loan deal. But I see you later. Good night, sweet prince.
Yeah, and then the last one, Mark, Steven Betisher. I don't think I've tweeted this out yet, Mark, so maybe this is an HTHL exclusive rather than me tweeting from Burgundy Wave first. Steven Betisher is not interested in retiring. He wants to be back, and it looks like the ball is in the team's court. I would not be shocked, Mark, if this was like a 1-year deal or a one-and-one, like how we had with Drew Moore. I have no idea if Beta is interested in coaching, but if he is and the new head coach comes in and likes him at that, I would not be upset with Beta being the last member of the coaching staff added in that first week in February.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's again that like he's taking up a position that somebody else could have, but
like Jackson Travis.
Yeah, but you're looking at the guy who's the 29th or 30th guy on the roster realistically, and I don't mean that literally because MLS rules have these 3 designations: supplemental, reserve, and reserve minimum salary, which was a whole new category that I don't believe existed until either a year or two ago. Technically, he'll be on the senior roster no matter what, but you always have a couple guys on the senior roster who don't do a lot. I mean, Abubakar Keita was that guy this year for the Rapids. So, you know, like, and we haven't even, Matt is furiously typing something because he's trying to figure out, he was like, oh, right, Abubakar Keita is a guy who exists. You know, he's only 23 and he'll be coming back to the team, and his contract actually goes through 2026 or 2025 with a club option for 2026. So, but anyways, point being, would I hate Steven Betisher coming back? Not really. I mean, that was my complaint about Colin Warner when he came back. I was like, we don't really need Colin Warner. I had 2 years of them re-signing him and complaining. And then Drew Moore's last year, I was kind of like, meh, you're basically paying player level money for a bonus coach, which I don't love. But at the end of the day, you know, it's pretty harmless. But the fighting over the 20th guy on the senior roster is just not worth doing. So I'd be fine with it. And he seems like a really good guy.
Yeah, so we're talking about this, listeners. MLS released the off-season calendar for them making bona fide offers to players who don't already have some form of offer or option for 2024. That has to be decided by November 22nd. So, Mark, as you mentioned, maybe Steven Betisher will be getting a nice Thanksgiving present in the form of a contract offer from the Rapids on Wednesday, November 22nd. And then, actually, Rabbi, the deadline for teams to inform the league of the options they're exercising and not exercising is December 1st. So we're talking the Rapids having a proper 5-6 weeks to make some of this decision. And I've heard from multiple people now, Mark, that the club is looking at finalizing a decision that first full week of November, so the week of the 6th or the week after that. So I think it is far more likely than not that the head coach is in place and publicly announced and done the press conference and taken the photo with the jersey and done the media roundtable before that December 1st deadline, and then even has an extra week to possibly 3 in order to go about discussing with people at the club, discussing with the players on those options before the club has to finalize that on December 1st. And I would not be shocked, Mark, if we do not hear anything come end of business on Friday, December 1st, and then we get a press release from the club first thing that Monday morning, and fans are freaking out over the weekend as to whether or not the Rapids exercised their options in order for the club to make the finalized decisions, but then not have it be publicly known to all the other clubs as a form of competitive information advantage there. Last thing that I want to say in terms of player stuff going on for next year, Mark, is that the Athletic, Jeff Reuter, have reported some details on the upcoming MLS Super Draft, and the key thing from a Rapids perspective could be that the league could be finalizing that players who have finished their sophomore year will then be eligible for the draft. So previously, listeners, it was guys could come out, I believe, after their junior year, but that wasn't always guaranteed if they weren't a GA contract, and then obviously all the seniors were eligible, but the majority of the noteworthy underclassmen that you saw came out, they came out because of the Generation Adidas program, and this would now potentially make juniors and seniors eligible for the draft, and then also GA players who could be freshmen or players coming out of there, or sophomores as well. And that's significant, Mark, because the Rapids have the second overall pick in the Super Draft. That's their natural pick, finishing second to last in the MLS Supporter Shield, and then they have the LA Galaxy's pick at 4, and then they also have St. Louis's, which is, I think, like 25 or 26. It's in the mid-20s. It's in the Anthony Markkanic zone, listeners. So, Mark, I can't remember if there's a fourth first-round pick or a high second-round pick that they have in that as well, but, Mark, the Rapids with those first two picks should be getting two players at different positions who definitely have the potential to contribute, possibly contribute regularly to the first team, and then maybe they get another project that has some sell-on value or some other value to the club later on. But the fact that this is something that the league is looking at is potentially about to improve and could take effect for this upcoming Super Draft, that opens up a whole bunch of other possibilities in terms of available players, Mark, that the Rapids could be looking after and trying to court. I have to think this is a good thing, and the Rapids absolutely need to capitalize on that second and that fourth Super Draft pick. These have to be the best senior coming out, like what Andre Shinyashiki did at DU, or these have to be the two ideal GA players in terms of the position of need and the style of play that the Rapids are looking for. And if they hit on those, that's two more young guys, just like we've talked about with the five homegrowns that were starting on, or that were playing by the end of the game on Saturday, that could be a massive part of this rebuild for 24 and 25.
I'm just not sure how this is going to work. I read the article by Jeff Reuter. I think what we're really going to be learning in the next year or two or three is whether this rule change is going to increase the number of underclassmen who come up, or whether it has no effect whatsoever. The reason it would increase it is because you don't have to designate a player, a Generation Adidas player, to pick him as a sophomore or a junior. He just gets picked. The reason that's not ideal is it seems like, from what I read, that you still basically have to make a side deal with the player. So the upside of the Generation Adidas contract for the player is if it doesn't work out for that guy, they still get money to compensate them for the fact that they missed out on college eligibility so that they can go back to college and finish their degree. It's unclear from this whether that's part of the deal, although I would assume that the reason that is attractive to players now is back, you know, we were mentioning, I was just mentioning the low-end contracts in 2018, and I've been tracking MLS contracts for almost 10 years now. You know, when I started watching MLS and covering it 10 years ago, you know, the low-end contracts were at like $29,000 for the year. You know, if you left school and then got paid $29,000 for the year and then got cut, your $29,000 wasn't worth missing out on a year of college. Well, now the MLS minimums are like $84,000, $87,000, $89,000. Now they really are. You know, you buy your Hyundai and your one bedroom apartment in Arvada, and you sock away the other $24,000. You can go back to college after your one failed year in Major League Soccer. So that's maybe the only reason that works. There is a convoluted paragraph or two in Reuter's thing about players who are homegrowns for a team who then get kind of picked during their undergraduate years in college. The Rapids have had a couple of players who they've passed on and let go to college and then haven't gone on to, and then were homegrowns, but didn't go on to the team. The best example I can give you is Milo Garvanian, who played for UNC. The Rapids made it aware they were not going to draft him. He was drafted by Major League Soccer. I don't remember if he signed with the team, but he wound up with New Mexico United. And I don't think he's no longer with them. But an example of a Rapids player was Sam Rabin, who played all 4 years for Wake Forest. And then he was a homegrown, so he didn't enter the draft, and the Rapids exercised his homegrown rights, stashed him with Colorado Springs. He played a little bit for the Rapids, I think, in the Open Cup, and then at the end of the season, they let him go, and Sam didn't stay with the Springs. Apparently, he went back to medical school. But I did have one thing that I wanted to say on that note, which is semi-related to all this. But based on a tweet that I said, for those of you who didn't see the tweet, I just want to say this because it's kind of a heartwarming thing. I would love to do a story on this if I had time and energy. But, you know, I think Davey Armstrong a few years ago didn't quite pan out for the Colorado Rapids. He played a little bit for Colorado Springs, and then he retired from soccer and then went on to being a firefighter for Westminster, and he still is working in the Denver metropolitan area as a firefighter, which is a pretty cool success story for a Rapids Academy player who isn't a soccer player. I have another Rapids Academy success story who is not a professional soccer player. This was a player that I've been tracking for a while that I was very excited about because he was playing for a top college team, and I was sure he was going to go on and do great things. And this is... trying to find the birth. When you recategorize your entire system by birth year, it's a little bit trickier. Don't do that, folks. It only causes problems. The Rapids had a player in, I believe, is it birth year 1999? It was birth year 1999, making him 24 years old. His name was Reese DeSoto. Went to Stanford, and with the extra year of eligibility after the pandemic, he graduated last year in 2023. In his final year for the Stanford Cardinal, well, in his years with the Stanford Cardinal, they won two national championships and went to the College Cup a third time. In Reese's senior year, he had 10 appearances and a goal, but he never quite reached the heights that he was expected to kind of be on when he left the Rapids Academy. Well, he I recently found him on LinkedIn, and he's working for a biotech data firm as a data statistician in the San Francisco Bay Area. He's doing data statistics research into mRNA medicines that help or may someday go to cure Alzheimer's. So honestly, between being a frontline player for the Colorado Rapids and possibly curing one of the more devastating diseases in the human body, I'll take the biomedical stuff for $10,000. Alex, Reese DeSoto going out and doing good things after his homegrown and college career. So that's a little bit of a kind of an off the wall update for all yins.
One other thing that we'll touch on, Mark, I already mentioned what I think what I've reported on as far as the timeline for the head coaching search, and that probably wrapping up in the next 2 to 3 weeks. I and apparently a bunch of other people have heard, Mark, that apparently Jack Wilshire absolutely crushed it and was super impressive with his tactical ideas and his approach to youth development, and was far beyond his years in terms of the 18 months, 2 years of coaching experience he's had with the U18s at Arsenal. Haven't been able to confirm that he's a front runner, what that looks like, Mark, but I have to believe from the five guys that made it on after the first round that Wilshire is probably could be making it to that next round. I've already said I don't think Chris Little is in that conversation. Little confirmed to me on Saturday after the game that he does have a contract beyond this year. So that could be as an assistant with the first team. We've seen what he's done at the academy level with Seattle Sounders, Mark. So he could move into an academy role for the Rapids. He could do something with R2. That's TBD. But in terms of candidates that we know that have been reported elsewhere, I think it's Wilshire and Juarez. And who knows what's going on with the other two. Mark, I might owe a mea culpa in saying that it was ridiculous that the Rapids were considering Jack Wilshire for the job, or saying that he was horribly underqualified for the position based on what we've heard, but we'll wait and see what happens. Mark, does this make you any more excited as a Gooner, as the prospects of Jack Wilshire being possibly the next head coach of the Rapids and possibly deserving it?
I would love it. I would absolutely love it. I really enjoyed... there's a bunch of midfielders, like there's something about Arsenal homegrown English midfielders that I just always love. Like, I love him. I love Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. There's a whole bunch of other of those guys who are now no longer with Arsenal that I could go through. But the idea that they would still remain in my life with the Colorado Rapids would make me really happy. Although, you know, the funny thing is and we'll probably talk about this the next time we meet, which will not be next week, I don't think. Matt is tired and burned out, wants to climb another 14er. You know, I am coming up upon, in about a month from today, my 10th anniversary as a soccer writer, which will be pretty cool. I do not know what I will probably write a soccer article to celebrate it. And, the idea that I will be coming up upon, I think it'll probably just be like my fifth coach that I've ever kind of spoken to or worked with. It might be my sixth in Rapids history. Is kind of fun, but you know, I don't look forward to being. I mean, because I'm distant, I don't think most people even know me anymore. But I don't relish the idea of being the guy in the press room when I look at a Rapids coach, where I look at them and go, "I remember your predecessor six predecessors ago, and let me tell you, Sonny." You know, that's not really the ideal position you want to put yourself in as a reporter. But I will carry that mantle if I can.
Two tidbits that I have that are kind of, that'll be a good chuckle for the listeners that are somehow still listening to this podcast, Mark. I got Sam Nicholson and Danny Wilson on the record. They are both Loch Ness Monster truthers. They believe that the Loch Ness Monster is real, and that brings me so much joy. And then I was somehow, Mark, my meme suit of me in my burgundy suit, go on over to my Twitter, folks, and you'll see the drip that myself, Brendan Plone, and Mitchell Carroll from DNVR had on. Was good enough to earn me an invite on the to the after party after Burgundy Affair ended as well, Mark. And one former captain of the Colorado Rapids may or may not have purchased me a beer, and I said goodbye to him after we both had at least one too many, and we were both almost holding back tears. So it was nice to – we've seen departures from players and not really had the opportunity to like properly say goodbye, Mark. And obviously the way that I conduct myself as a member of the media is maybe a little bit different, but to see just how humanizing – Sunday was a confirmation for me, Mark, about so much respect and street cred that I have within the organization, amongst the playing staff and other people as well. And then to get to say goodbye or good luck, or if this is goodbye, like, hey, nothing but respect and everything, and to have that be reciprocated in a really deeply human, connecting, personal, living in the present moment with that player who at times in the past, or for the majority of them, we've had a restrained relationship in terms of we conduct ourselves professionally with each other, and there's a certain level of we don't get too personal, because at the end of the day, I have to criticize them and you're not going to be here as long, and I have to be able to be constructive without necessarily, like, I would not say there's any player current or past at the time that I was friends with. I would say I'm friends with Drew Moore now, but that's obviously different now that he's not a player who I'm interviewing, asking difficult questions of, criticizing. But to be able to like leave on that such good terms, or that sense of mutual understanding and respect and everything, was just absolutely fantastic. And that was represented by the way that, you know, I said goodbye to Jack Price, amongst a few other players as well. And so I want to celebrate that.
Matt, you are a certified legend.
This has been such a sucky year for so many people. Listeners, I want to thank every single one of you who listened to Holding the High Line. Watching your favorite sports team be crap is not fun. And then listening to a podcast for an hour and a half every single week that then dissects the ways in which they are consistently crap is not fun. And so I appreciate every single one of you. We appreciate now every single person who supported us on our Substack, because we are now officially out of the Cheers to the Six pint glasses. So I want to thank all of you for doing that. It takes a village to actually have a soccer community. And regardless of how poor things were on the field, we have a really, really good village of listeners, of support staff, of people who we interact with the club, who don't do anything on the technical side and everything, and just really good humans, from the fans to the media to the people around the club and everything. And so I just want to acknowledge that. I want to cherish that, and every single fan that is listening to that. You know, RSL had the banner on Saturday, Mark, which I'm sure you saw, which said our rivalry deserves better. In terms of what the club is trying to do on the field to put a competitive and compelling product on the field, this podcast deserves better. In terms of the reception that we have gotten from the community and from Rapids fans, normalizing for what has gone on around this club this year, we could not have anything better in terms of this community. I'm so glad that the pint glasses are sold out and everything. I'm so grateful for all the support, and listeners, will see you next year for that. Off season, we're definitely not podcasting next week. We will podcast when there is news to talk about. So when there's a coaching hire, we'll podcast that. When the club drops news about their roster decisions for the end of the year, we will podcast for that. But I would not be shocked, Mark, if we're not doing a podcast more than once every 3 weeks for the rest of the calendar year. In lieu of that, listeners, if you want to communicate with us, you can follow us on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, and at Rapids96Podcast. Mark's Rapids content written-wise, you can find it at our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. All of my Rapids content will be at burgundywave.com. And if you want to get touch in long form, if somehow you haven't received your pint glass, or you're wondering about shipping situation with that, or you want other merch, Mark, we still got some Michael Azira shirts available, right?
We do. We have a couple of Michael Azira shirts in various sizes, so I can't promise it's the right size for you, but we'll make it fit. Maybe it'll be something to sleep in if it's not the ideal size for you.
So if you have any interest in that, or if you are lonely and want to communicate with us and don't prefer to be on the Bird Letter app, then you can email us at rapids96podcast@gmail.com. And you can also submit questions to us using the hashtag AskHTHL. With that, the 2023 Colorado Rapids season comes to a close. We will see you in the near future.
Peace.